Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
What's up, guys? It's Candace Dillard-Bassett, and this is Undomesticated. Follow and listen to Undomesticated, available wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
More from the New York perspective, BT, how the Mets and Yankees need to get to the level of the Dodgers. Like, the Dodgers is not some team that just develops and puts their players in the big leagues and go has success. The Dodgers trade a lot of their prospects and go after star after star after star and sign guys on top of guys on top of guys again. Freeman, Betts, Ohtani, Yamamoto, all the guys that they get from Japan, on top of Blake Snell and trading for Glasnow and Tanner Scott, even though he's not effective this year. Like, it just doesn't end with the Dodgers. They're going to be in on Soto. They're going to be in on Kyle Tucker. So why is it that when it pertains to the Mets and Yankees, we're like, okay, well, yeah, we take this guy and then expect less than, as opposed to saying, yeah, well, that's great that you have some guys. You're great. You got Soto. Why not get a starter on top of that? Great that the Yankees were able to bring in Bellinger and Friedman. Why not do more on top of that? I think the Mets and Yankees need to do. Sadly, I mean, I know it's asking a lot, but hey, you want to compete with the Dodgers, they need to do more.
You want to be good or do you want to be great? And listen, there's some off seasons where there's just not a real runway to be great. Sometimes the free agents are, yeah, it's a little thin and maybe overpay. You want to do something, but you know the player that you're offered a contract to is really not necessarily worth what you're offering. I think it's very different this offseason, whether it's a trade for Skubal, you know, Bichette from a hitting perspective, Tucker all around, Bregman all around. There are a lot of guys that are going to be available that can absolutely impact October, not to mention regular season success. So, you know, what's happened here, Sal, is that the Dodgers have been more aggressive, and then it's one thing to be more aggressive. For years, the Yankees were more aggressive. I don't know that the Yankees were ever smarter than every other team. They were more aggressive.
Right.
The Dodgers are more smarter because they are more forward-thinking, whether it's the deferred payments, and then they take that money and then reinvest it and make a ton more money, and I'll leave that to the finance people, but trust me, they're making a lot of money off this, you know, not to mention the merchandising. So their success has only emboldened them to go deeper and deeper and deeper into the ocean of aggressiveness because they've been rewarded both on the field and monetarily. So it's a real opportunity to step up and, you know, not a little tweak, not a little ancillary piece. There are a lot of big sharks out there that the Yanks and the Mets can reel in. And if they want to, I assume the Dodgers will win the World Series, although you never know. But if you want to upend the Dodgers and get to that level, which currently nobody's at, you got to change the way you operate a little bit, Sal.
But even if they don't win the World Series, the message still remains the same. Like, look at their roster.
Yeah.
Look at how loaded they are. Even with guys that are hurt, they have multiple guys to step in and fill the void.
Yeah.
So they are not only smart, but they also are more aggressive. Like, once they got Yamamoto, or even I guess it was after they got Ohtani, I'm like, well, they're not going to get Yamamoto. No, they got him on top of Ohtani. Think about the contracts that they added. Deferred or not, it doesn't matter. Yamamoto was $300 million. I'm just, rounding up here. Ohtani, the $700 million, whatever he was. You're talking about $1 billion in contract and two players. They signed Blake Snell. They traded for Glasnow. Like, the Dodgers are smart and aggressive. If there's a trade to be had, they go out there and get that guy. So why is it then, well, the Mets get Soto, and now it's, well, let's back off. I can't expect them to go get Blake Snell or a starter as well. That's the reality that it should be now for the Mets and Yankees. Now, the Dodgers are also fortunate that the Yankees tried to get Ohtani years ago, and that kind of changed the entire landscape. I certainly didn't think it at the time, but it changed the landscape of the entire sport because had Ohtani, like Matsui or like Tanaka before him or Arabu, had he chosen the Yankees, this would be an alternate timeline here, different universe. Think about that.
Yeah, in a lot of ways it would be, for sure.
But it could have happened, and the Yankees thought, if memory serves correct, I think the Yankees thought they were going to get him years ago before he signed with the Angels.
It was a point that I thought the Yankees were going to get everybody.
Right, well, right, but they thought they were going to him. He ends up going to the Angels, and then it became an afterthought. And then he was hurt to start, whatever. He was not what he was now. Then he leaves, and he wanted no part of New York. That's when the Mets got back involved. Ohtani goes to the Dodgers, and then the Japanese stars follow from there, whether it's Yamamoto or Sasaki, on top of the other things. Like, hey, I know that the Brewers are a nice story. I know the Guardians are a nice story every year. Mm-hmm. The reality is you want to play with the big boys, you've got to flex your financial muscle in multiple ways, not just spending in free agency, but also in the trade market, and the Mets and Yankees need to do more.
Yeah, the one thing that I don't understand, and listen, they've never really spoken on this, maybe at some point the Japanese star will actually sit down and we will get a sense of why, you know, the Dodgers have usurped the Yankees in so many ways in terms of being the premier, you know, domestic destination. I don't know the answer. I can theorize, and we've done that a little bit today. Obviously, the weather out west is much better. It's a quicker flight to Japan. Those things matter logistically. But, see, here's what I'm confused about. And I mentioned Arabu, and I mentioned Matsui, and I mentioned Tanaka, all right? So Matsui's a World Series MVP, hero, Tanaka, ace, really, really good. Arabu, absolute disaster. I mean, rest in peace. I'm just going to leave it at that. Didn't work out with Hideki Arabu.
But I forgot he died.
He did die. So
what was it? You remember?
I don't. Maybe a heart attack, an aneurysm. I think it was something.
You think that because of the shape, you know, the physical condition is what made me think heart attack, too. I don't know that.
But I think it was definitely, it wasn't like cancer. It wasn't like a slow death.
Arabu.
Yeah. I mean, it was kind of a long time ago at this point.
Yeah, I know.
Real quick, I come back from the Hamptons one year, right? And he's pitching. God, it wasn't against I'll have to double check this. I believe his first start was against the Tigers in Detroit. I could be off on that. And I remember I'm at a bar in Queens, somewhere near WFAN's old studio, and with shoes in, and what's the other guy who does hockey who was at FAN for a long time?
Joe Tolleson was there.
Yeah. And we're having a couple of pints. I was playing on the softball team, right? And I believe it was Arabu's first game. And then, you know, having a good time. I think he struck out 11 or 12 guys. Look great. Then I'm in the Hamptons later that summer with my best friend. And we come back and he's pitching on Sunday Night Baseball. And we stop off at the grocery store and we get a couple of Sapporos. We got the Japanese beer. We had this little, this little tiny Japanese figure that we put on top of the TV screen. Then he got lit up and we lit him on fire and it didn't work out well. But the point is, I told you a weird side turn. The point is, if Arabu, who had a bad experience here, was the last rather than Tanaka and Matsui and the order was flipped, well, then I could see maybe some Japanese players saying, yeah, I don't know. I don't, you know, the Yankees without George and the Yankees now and Hideki didn't have a good time. I'm not going to go there. But it's the opposite. It was Hideki Arabu first, and he's largely insignificant. Matsui loved it here, and so did Tanaka. So their experiences were great. Outside of money, I don't know what's going on.
BT and Sal on the Fan, 888-808-1019. Our friends at Town Fair Tire remind you that at Town Fair Tire, you always get the guaranteed lowest price on name brand tires from Connecticut to Maine. Nobody beats Town Fair Tire. Nobody. Before the break, I teased that there was a report about a possible Giants trade.
Receiver?
You ready for this one?
Yes, I am.
So Jordan Schultz, you familiar with
him? Yeah, of course,
okay,
absolutely.
I was just looking him over. I thought he used to work at Fox, but I'm not 100% sure. Anyway, he's an NFL insider, hosts the Schultz Report.
Okay.
He tweeted out a little while ago, sources, another name to watch on the trade front, Giants edge rusher, Kayvon Thibodeau.
Oh,
he's under contract for another year. Some around the league have wondered whether he's part of New York's long-term plans and if he could become available with the Giants sitting at 2-6. Teams are actively exploring the pass rush trade market, but movement has been slow in part because there are so many available options.
Hmm.
So that's an interesting thought that Kayvon could be on the move going the other way. Now, I'm all for bringing in another receiver, and that may seem unlikely now, and I think Paul Schwartz may have had that in the post. Somebody had it that it might seem unlikely now the Giants will upgrade. I still would do that. We talked about this weeks ago. I don't care about the record now. I care about helping Jackson Dart any way that I could. I also would be looking to benefit the team long-term, and even though Kayvon's here for one more year, if the defense isn't playing like an elite defense, and you're not winning, you're not going to commit to him long term.
Yeah.
When he's one of the guys that's, you know, getting up there as far as the, I know Burns old as well, but at least Burns is producing.
He's great.
You got Abdul Carter. It's kind of redundant.
You paid Dexter.
That's what I'm saying. So it's kind of redundant with Thibodeau.
Uh-huh.
It seems to me that on the surface, it would make some sense for maybe the Giants to move on from Kayvon Thibodeau.
I wouldn't have an issue with it at all. I really wouldn't myself. Because of the circumstance, not because so much the player. Now, if they hadn't devoted, you know, the money with Burns and the draft equity with Burns and the trade before they got him, if they didn't give $60 million, I know there was a slight restructure, but they didn't give $60 million to Dexter Lawrence, if they didn't just take Abdul Carter with the third overall pick, Well, then there's really nothing to talk about, because then you would say, all right, we would imagine that Kayvon Thibodeau is going to be a piece of the puzzle moving forward, and we could easily justify giving him bigger money because we haven't already, you know, Abdul's going to be up in a couple of years, Lawrence, and everything else I said about Burns. So based on the circumstances, I think that that's entirely plausible. Remember, there was a conversation last year. Didn't they pick up... it was picking up his option.
Right.
Picked up. There was a thought right. that they weren't sure 100% if they were going to pick up the option. There was at least a little conversation around that. So I don't know the depth and the accuracy of that report. I'll believe it at face value. And from my opinion, I think that that's something the Giants should be open to if somebody calls with a good deal.
Yeah, Off says they picked it up in April. By the way, before we get back to the calls, and I hate to do this because it's not a good note here, but Arabu, somebody texted me, reminded me, and then I just looked it up. He
killed himself?
Yes.
Yeah,
he was found.
Okay, you know, I wasn't sure.
Dang,
that's
I forgot
even
about
worse.
That.
Jeez.
Yeah, wow. That's brutal. Poor Arabu. Anyway, I don't know how you transition from that, but I wanted to just give the accurate thought there. All right, BT and Sal on the Fan. But to your point, it wasn't like that was the end of the road for the Yankees as far as getting Japanese stars.
It got better. They all enjoyed it after that.
Correct. BT and Sal on the Fan. Ray is calling from Waterbury, Connecticut. What's up, Ray?
Hi, guys. Great show as usual. You guys are right about the Mets and Yankees. You know what? I understand. Ohtani backloaded that tremendous amount of money, and which shouldn't have been right. But you know what? It is what it is. The Mets got to upgrade, whether it's spending money, trades. If they can get Scooble, fine. But I won't give up McLain. If it's going to be McLain, because you want to get better. You want both of them. So the bottom line
is... Well, hold on, Ray. Can I ask you? I got you. And Sal's really reluctant to give up McLain as well. And by the way, I get it, because I think he's going to be terrific. I've said that since day one. He looks different. He looks like a guy. Not a guy. So I'm with you. But if you could trade him for Scooble and then go get, say, Valdez in free agency, you don't think that's worth it, at least exploring?
Not with McLain. To me, he's off the...
But he's never going to be Scooble. He's never going to be Scooble.
No. You get school if you get Scooble, you want McLain with him. If it's going to take McLain, then I go in another direction.
Okay, but here's the thing. All right, but Ray, and thank you for the call. But now this is where I at least will philosophically push back and disagree to an extent, because you know I love him. I've established that a long time ago about McLain. The problem is there's no guarantee. I can sit there and say I think McLain's going to be Tom Seaver Jr., and he might be. But he might not be. We already know that Scooble is the real deal. So to not be open, at least open on the most basic level, to have a conversation about involving McLain for Scooble, if that's the demands, the drop-dead demands of the Tigers, to me is the wrong move.
Think about this, too. Now, I wouldn't do it, and I gave you the reasons why. But think about this. If you go back 2 months ago, Sproat was looked at as probably the number one guy. And if I were to tell you 2 months ago you could get Scooble, you just have to trade McLain. Most people would have done that. Now, I know that McLain had the season that brought him up to the level where he was going to be the guy, but maybe 3 months ago, Sproat, like going into the year, Sproat was the top guy that people were talking about maybe having an impact this year. So those things change. However, I would look at McLain and saying he just, the same way as Schlittler, like they're the most valuable asset in the entire sport. Young, top-end pitching that's under team control. It's hard to justify giving them up for a one-year rental. For Paul Skeens, different story. Now, Ray could say, well, if not, I go in a different direction. The problem is there is no direction that brings you anywhere to an ace outside of Scooble.
That's what I'm saying.
Right, but you could just wait a year and then sign him in the offseason.
That's wait a year. You know, Soto getting, he's still young, but I mean, Lindor getting older. Waiting a year and off on the Mets. I'm going for it. I'm jumping face first into the pool. I'm going nuts if I'm going.
Then here's the way to do it, and I still... Like, I would do everything I could. The Mets, by a lot of accounts, have the number one farm system in the sport. So, like, you can get him. It's just a matter of how much they're going to be willing to give up. If there's a way you get him without McLain, it's a home run.
Well, of course, I'm pushing for that first and foremost.
Now,
I got you there.
Now, let's just say that they had to give up McLain.
Yep.
And they bite the bullet and say, okay, we'll give up McLain to do it. Now, you're going to have to replenish what McLain was going to give you by spending more money.
Correct.
So, you've spent, which is possible, whether it's... Suarez with the Phillies, Valdez. Now, I'm not saying I would do this, but those are the type guys that you're looking at. I actually like Suarez with the Phillies more than I do Valdez with the Astros. But
I probably agree with that, by the way. I should have said Suarez. Suarez is nasty. He's really good.
You would need and he's been great in the postseason. Yep. You would need a number two. But again, now it's more cost effective. Plus, you're going to have to pay Scooble 400, you know, near $400 million. So it's just not a smart business move when a player is that close to free agency. And this is me. Like, the last thing I am is a prospect hugger. I'm a prospect kicker. I want them out. Get them out. Trade them all. I don't like any of the prospects. I do understand the importance of it, especially the young pitcher with star potential that's shown to have star potential at the big league level that's going to be under control for years to come.
Hey, and by the way, if the Yankees didn't have Gerrit Cole coming back and Max Fried on the contract, I'd be saying that I would be willing to trade Schlittler.
Right.
I would, like, to me, it's not so much, it's not a philosophy, it's a philosophy that I can tweak based on what I have, or maybe in the Mets case, what I don't have. Like, as much as you want to hold on to McClain, you got to get somebody at the top of the rotation. I'm not telling you guys anything you don't know. So I would be more open to it from a Mets perspective than the Yankees. But if the Yankees didn't have some guys up top, then I'd be saying the same things. I'm just looking at the latest is Bleacher Report. All right, I'm going to give you the top five systems right now going into the hot stove.
Yeah.
Minor league, updated. Tigers, number five. Mets, number four. Pirates, number three. Dodgers, number two.
Yeah.
You're
right.
Unbelievable. Seattle, number one. Yanks are not in the top five. I don't even know if they're in the top 10.
But these are all subjective. Like,
Understood. Like, even the point about how you said Sproat was more favorably viewed by some than McClain
a year ago. Like,
I got news for you. I think Tong was, too. He was the one who was in the futures game for the Mets.
There you go.
Think about it.
Right, so now it's
like, that fluctuates.
Now it's give him Sproat and Tong, but not McClain. Like, it changes.
Now let
Spencer Jones, 2 years ago, was can't trade.
Easy on my boy Spence. He's coming.
But I'm saying he's a prime example. 2 years ago, was can't trade him for Corbin Burns. Last year, was get rid of this guy for a bag of balls. And now it's back on to, oh, I'm not trading Spencer Jones. Like, come on.
Yep. I'm looking at the actual prospects here. McClain's one, Tong two, Ben. They say Benji, right? The kid, the outfielder.
Carson.
Oh, it is Benji. Soft G. Jet Williams, obviously. Brandon Sproat, AJ Ewing, Jacob Reimer or Reimer.
Yeah,
he's a third baseman. Pena, obviously. Clifford, first base. We talked about him, and then Weniger. So
McClain can't be considered a prospect at this point, though, because he's going to be on the big league. You know, he's going to be in the rotation.
They give you some criteria like tier one, two, three, four. I think tier one. I just buzzed through it fast. I think tier one is if you played in the bigs a little bit. Versus some other projections. But, yeah, I mean, he's not a prospect. He's their ace at this point.
Yeah, at this point he's their ace, and he can't be. By the way, shout out to Joe Fish. He's texting me. You know Joe Fish?
I don't know if I know Joe.
Jamie, a Cadillac?
Yeah, of course.
Her father.
Oh, yeah.
Die hard Yankee fan.
That's like why he runs Caddy. He's the man.
He's one of the first ones to text me after the Mets got eliminated.
Right after your uncle.
Yeah, exactly. He beat my Uncle John. He actually, Joe Fish was the first one up, beat my Uncle John.
Okay.
Texting me, tweaking me, oh, how's Soto? Playoffs, all this stuff. So Joe Fish, and then he's the one who told me about Arabu.
Oh,
and then
did.
I mentioned the Arabu. I don't think he wants credit for that. And then I'm getting a text. He goes, how about a shout out?
I'm like, well, make up your mind there, buddy.
Well, no.
Do you want it or not?
No, I was saying that I don't think he wanted to be, you know, like, hey, by the way, Joe Fish was the one who reminded me that Arabu.
But then
himself.
He texted you and said, give
because
me some love?
Yeah. Then after we mentioned, he's going, how about a name shout-out? All right, well, there you go, Joe Fish. Thank you for
looking
letting
for
us
glory,
know
looking for that glory, Joe. I mean, come on, just lay out, Joe. Well, give us the information.
Well,
keep it off the record, buddy.
Joe Fish is, you know, he's hurt because his Yankees aren't in the World Series right now.
Not as hurt as you.
Oh, no. I think
not
he
as
is.
Hurt as you.
Oh, I think he is.
You guys
I'm long
are
over it.
We're over it.
I'm long over it. I'm way over it. The Mets have been ousted for a while. I gave up on the Mets months ago. The last 2 weeks of the season, I knew they were toast.
Truth of the matter is, honestly, even though the World Series is still going on, at this point, I'm over it as well.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
What's up, guys? It's Candace Dillard-Bassett, and this is Undomesticated. Follow and listen to Undomesticated, available wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Halloween is this Friday.
Oh, yeah, well aware.
Are you dressing up as anything?
No, but I have in the past. I've done, you know, when they were young, we did a family theme. So my son was born first. I was Darth Vader. My wife was Princess Leia, and he was little Yoda.
Okay.
And then the next year, now my daughter's there, and I think they were both like Elmo and, no, I was, oh God, I was the Tin Man from Wizard of Oz. Right. Jen was Scarecrow, and they were figures there from there as well. And then, like, I was Batman, and he was Robin. So we do a family theme that obviously ended after they were like four or five. So you're still in the family theme, though.
Yeah, but family theme is separate than dressing up for work. Because I have an idea for a costume.
Dress up for work?
Yeah, yeah. Well, like, why don't you come up with something, and we'll be in studio, and we can watch people watch on YouTube.
Yeah. What do you want to do?
Well, I have something that I'll unveil it Friday, but why don't you think of something creative and you could...
Wait, so you want to do, like, is it a theme where we do the two totally different genres or...
Could be.
Like, you know, I'm Han and you're Luke or, no, you're totally Rocky different. And, you know, I'm Drago
Totally
or...
different. Like, Hoff, okay. you're allowed to play this game too. Like, I wasn't going to do it because normally I don't, like you said, my daughter's going to be Lilo and I'm going to be Stitch.
Oh, my daughter loves Lilo.
She picked. Yeah, so Sammy picked. So, good. Okay, daddy's going to be Stitch again, walking around in the costume with the head thing on.
Hey, who's that mean Stitch, mommy?
But I thought,
our neighbor.
I thought of something for myself. I was like, you know what? I'm going to come in Friday dressed as something. It has something to do with sports. But I have an idea. I went and got the costume, and I'm going to be that Friday. Hoff, do you want to dress up Friday and come up with something sports
themed? I dress up every day as like a loser.
What?
Well, that is true.
I'm a Mets fan.
You said it yourself.
Okay, but hold on a second. Halloween is Friday, right?
Yes.
So how the hell are we going to wait till Friday? We got to figure this out if I got to order something.
I already figured out last week. Yeah, you're right.
Let's do it now.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, what are you?
I'm doing my own thing.
Okay, so you're not including me.
Correct. I'm doing my own. Like, I already have the costume. You could.
If you want to do something together here?
Not particularly.
I hate dressing up for Halloween.
Yeah.
We welcome in the Mink Man. Mink, have you ever dressed up for Halloween?
No, you can't be Sydney Sweeney's jeans. Stop,
you can't ask me a question like that.
Why Mink?
Well, all right. Yes, I've dressed up.
Like what? Give me the costume.
But not lately.
Okay, yeah. Like what? What was the last thing?
Last time was probably when I was a kid.
And? What was it? Howdy Doody? Well, like, what are we talking about?
I was a football player.
Mink.
I pretend to be a football player.
Star linebacker, John Minko.
You pretended to be an Army announcer for football for 9 years.
Oh, no, dude.
10 years.
No, but that's
hey, Minko, don't let him say that to you, man. Pretended.
You were the legend,
and now I'm pretending to be a St. John's
runner. And now he's the voice of a top five team in the country, so suck on that, Sal.
And both of you, congratulations, I guess, are in order as the game's going to be on the radio this year.
Looks like we'll have some of that stuff, which is we're very excited about. We got a lot of good things going on. Hey, though, Minky, thing about Mink, you are ever the corporate man. To an extent where it's a little bit much. Like, I never see you and you're not wearing something that says St. John's.
Yeah, but they give me lots of clothes.
They give me stuff, too.
I don't have any Adidas stuff yet.
No, me neither. No Adidas yet. Let's go. Eddie Cole, wake up.
How's retirement treating you? You miss the fans still?
Yeah, I come every year. And usually I pick today, or basically this time, because there are no vacations. And... And so, you know, I said, you know, basketball season officially starts on Monday. Mm. I said today or yesterday or maybe tomorrow would be the day to come.
But very strategic, Mink.
Yeah.
Understand.
Were you disappointed when you walked into the newsroom and nobody is there? I'm like, when you used to.
What do you mean the newsroom? That was empty, too.
I had a trouble getting after I get off the elevator. There was no one there. And then I call up the newsroom and no one picks up the phone.
Good thing one of the salespeople
let me in.
I heard a sad story today. Mink was in my office before the show. We were talking. And you were telling me about your last day here at the Fan. You really wanted to come in. What happened there?
Oh, God.
I wasn't allowed.
You wanted to come into work, and they said no.
Yes, I did. Yes, I did. It was, but you know, a lot of strange things happened. It was during the pandemic. And so, you know, when I left after all this time, 33 years, you know, it wasn't like, you know, people leaving now.
Hold on, Mink. First of all, I have a question. When you say it's the pandemic, is it like the real pandemic or the imaginary pandemic at the back end where people were freaking out
like
the lunatics?
The after effect or in the heart of...
No, is it the year 2000? I mean,
2020?
I retired in a basement.
What year, though, Mink?
2000.
And 2000?
Okay, 5 years ago.
I got you. So 2020, like March, April, May, I don't remember the month. I honestly don't.
I left in April.
Oh, so that's okay. Oh,
April 3rd.
Fair enough. And what happened? Like, you wanted to come in and Chernoff said no?
Chernoff said no.
Why would he do that to
me? Well, he said, He said, well, there's going to only be a couple of producers there. And they wanted to see you.
I said,
they're my friends.
Here. Yeah, that sounds so sad. You're right, they're my friends. And he still said no?
Yeah, he said no. So I couldn't do it here. And
God.
And so I did it, you know, in my basement. And everybody, folks, everybody has a station email.
I haven't checked mine in 8 years, but yeah.
In years?
8 years. Yeah, I don't know how to get in. I'm locked out, but keep going. Don't, it doesn't,
wait a
don't,
minute. You get memos from corporate people and everything like that, and you don't check those?
8 years. Keep going.
So go ahead. You
know, that's sad.
Yeah.
But anyway,
go ahead.
I looked, and I said, you know what? Maybe we'll see if anybody said anything nice about me. So I go look it up. It's gone. I said, boy, they couldn't wait to get rid of me.
Wait. Meaning you couldn't even gain access to your email?
They took it away.
What? That said.
Poor Mink.
Come on, Mink.
God bless you, Mink. We love you.
John Minko.
He couldn't come in and work.
See, Dove is finding this out for the first time.
How many years were you here? You know what the building looks like.
Yeah, I love
so
you guys
you couldn't come in. And then you went to check your email because maybe somebody heard you for the final time signing off, and they were going to say, like, hey, Mink,
yeah,
man, we
love
you.
Somebody that I work with, since I couldn't come in, would write something nice, and I wanted to see if maybe someone would write something not nice.
Did you at least make a news?
Happened.
Did they get around to, like, some little blurb in a newsletter or something? Had to be something corporate, maybe even a couple of months after the fact,
no,
right?
No, I never... Nothing.
If it makes you feel any better, I did not email you. Hoff says he didn't email you, so maybe you didn't miss anything.
No, wait a minute. Yes, you did.
I texted you, I think.
Yes, did.
Yeah. Probably, Mink. I was just trying to give a little bit there, make myself look callous and try to build you up a little bit, but it's okay.
Nobody bites into the bit like this guy. I mean,
have you talked to... I saw you with Summers, Huesler, and Francesa at a Met game. Was that this year or was that 2 years
ago? That was last year.
And how was that? You still talk to Mike on occasion?
Oh, yeah. And Summers.
I mean, Mike. And Huesler. Mike kind of, I know you had a big career doing Knicks stuff, doing baller stuff, all that stuff, but, you know.
Doing baller.
I grew up knowing you, the Mink Man, from listening to Mike and the Mad Dog. I think that's how the majority of us knew John Minko. So you still stay in touch with Mike and Chris?
Of course.
Who do you like better?
You want to ad-lib on that?
Who do you like better?
No, I like both of them.
Who do you like better?
I got one with everybody.
Who do you talk to more frequently?
Actually, I talked to Mike more frequently.
Okay, here you go. All right.
So,
about what? Have you been on a podcast?
Well,
are you talking about golf? Are you talking about the Johnnies? What are you talking about? About the old days?
No, we have talked about the Johnnies.
Well, Francesca cares about them because they're good now.
No golf, okay.
No, because I tell him. I said the only golf I play is putt-putt.
Oh, okay. He invited you out to play golf and you said no?
No, I don't think he invited
somebody actually did.
Yeah.
I was invited to a St. John's golf outing.
Oh, the big outing out east.
And I told Steve Dombrowski, who invited me, I said, I don't play golf. You don't want to see me playing golf, and the course doesn't want to see me playing golf.
Yeah, but hold on. Now, listen, you're very, very humble. And
we'll be there for 2 days on 18 holes if I play.
Understood, but, you know, I think this is where you sell yourself short, and I appreciate it because it's born out of humility, but... Even if you took 17 shots, which you probably would take more, to finish a hole, I think all the St. John's fans would just love seeing you. You don't understand that about yourself. You got to lean into that, buddy.
I played golf at a real course in Indianapolis, Harbor Trees, and I shot a 90.
What? That's good.
You have 9 holes.
No.
Not bad, Mink. There you go. Not bad.
Sky Mink, right. You are one of a kind, buddy. You are. Hey, answer this. How much has having Patino around revitalized you as a broadcaster in a lot of ways, right?
Oh, yeah. He's revitalized every single aspect of the program.
Yeah.
You know, and...
Of the university, not just the program.
And the university. Yeah. And I think one of the factors was what we saw... Saturday night, a exhibition game at Madison Square Garden.
14,000 people.
With 14,000 people.
Exhibition game against Michigan.
And that just goes, you know, that I don't, that gives you a, I mean, we, St. John's is used to playing Division II, and most teams are used to playing Division II and Division III teams, couple of exhibition games.
Like St. Thomas Aquinas, they lost to them a couple of years. Like those kind of games.
That was Chris Mullin's first game.
I remember.
They lost by 20, 30 points.
Yeah, oh, jeez. Should have told us what was happening.
Will you read Steve Sommers' new book? It comes out November
18th. Yes, I have it. They gave me, Giannotti gave me a free copy.
Okay, and what do you think? Well, why'd Gio get one? You didn't get one from Steve? I guess they must have had him laying around. But anyway, you'll read that book?
Yes. Yeah. And it'll be interesting to see how much of that book I lived.
Right. I think you're going to learn something from that. Because even I worked with him. Obviously, you worked with him a lot longer, but I produced for him for a while. There were things in that I learned. Are you going to write your own book one day?
I don't think so.
Why not?
I don't think any publisher is going to come up to me and say, you want to write a book?
Yeah, you got the dirt on
the
fan.
With him. He's still minimizing what you've done.
But I would say this. If a publisher came and whatever, and I wrote a book, the book would be on the first year of this radio station, probably not much else.
Well, why? I want the dirt behind the scenes. What happened with Mike and Chris with the breakup? About what I missed? Like, you got to get into all that. I could start with the first year.
That's the first chapter.
Yeah.
But then keep going.
Right.
No, the first chapter is the first year.
Yeah.
You know, the history, and even the icon can vouch for this. The history of this radio station revolves around 1987.
It does.
Okay, you want to enlighten us to it, or
no? We'd be here until the end of this year, saying what all that meant.
You're a trip, you know. You really are.
You know, I'd like to. Maybe I should do the book and interview.
I'll say this.
Here we go.
Other than corporate people, and you know, corporate people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I could very well possibly be the first person to ever know about this place.
What do you mean?
You've got to be the first person to write a book about it to that extent.
What do you mean?
Because WHN 1050, that was before WFAN. And the program director of that station was named Gary Havens, who was a classmate of mine at Butler. And he was my program director at WIRE in Indianapolis, where I worked. And we're both good friends with Rick Cummings.
You got a little tip.
So here's the deal. I come home for vacation in last week of June in 1986, and I call up Gary. I said, can I come visit you? I said, I'm here for the week. Can I come to New York and visit you? And so I come to WHN, met the people here, Del DeMontro, Lee Arnold. And so I go in Gary's office. He shuts the door. And I said, Gary, I haven't done anything. He says, I'm going to tell you something you can't tell anybody else. I said, who am I going to tell? And he goes, you're going to get a call from Rick next week. They're thinking of changing this station to all sports. And I sat there, what was that now? And he said, again, they're thinking of doing it for all sports. And indeed, I got the call the following week, which would be the first week of July of 86. And I went to some meetings with Jeff Schmullion and all that. Rick Cummings, who was the national program director for MS, was dead set against this. I helped talk him into it a little bit. And it goes on from there. But
what was your first job?
I knew about this place the last week of June in 1986.
And what was your first job with the station?
Well, the station was very uncomfortable having me here. Mm. And
just like we are now.
Right. That's exactly right.
Why?
Imus was uncomfortable having me here. I was fired five times from Imus.
Sorry, man.
That was hysterical.
I mean, John Chanum was the general manager. John Chanum, this is all in my book, folks. John Chanum was the general manager, the program director. Well, he was the general manager at that time. I don't know if we had one. But anyway, I go into his office after the first staff meeting, which was on a Monday. And I was the first one, and he says, well, I appreciate your efforts in helping here, but I got to tell you, we're very uncomfortable with having you here.
Okay, why though? Because we're trying to get to why.
They thought I was a corporate spy.
Ah, okay, wow. Now we're getting to it.
Okay,
were you all those years? You might have been, now that I think about it, out in the newsroom. Did you get me fired?
And he said, and your shifts will reflect this. So he said, quote, we don't want you around here during the daytime.
Maybe you should have taken the hint. I mean, I'm pretty ballsy. Actually, I give you respect for basically ignoring that and walking in and saying, okay, I'm coming despite this guy not wanting me here.
I told him, I said, I'm not here to do blah, 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 uh-huh. and all that. And I said, and you'll see. And so I worked overnights on the weekends.
With who?
With Jody McDonald.
Jody, wow. Mac, I love Jody.
He's an original host. And Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, they sent me out to baseball games. They wanted me nowhere near the radio station.
And you would just collect sound and stuff like that?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, BT, kind of bookend then to your career. In the beginning, they didn't want you anywhere near it.
Come on.
Stop
knocking on guy around here, man. I mean, they didn't want you at the beginning and they didn't want you at the end. That's what he's saying.
But you know what, though? The middle was pretty good.
Who was the Mets manager? So was that Torber? Who was the Mets manager? Was that Dallas Green? Yeah, who?
When you Johnson.
I'm saying for the Yankees. So Yankees was 80. Was that Dallas Green or Bucky Dent? That was a couple of years before Stump Merrill. If you don't remember, it's not a big deal. But it was one of those guys, right? Obviously, David.
But I remember David Johnson because Howie Rose's Mets extra interviews with David Johnson, they were classic.
I've heard about that. Contentious. They would get after it.
They were, because Howie was on strategy and stuff. And Davey would explain himself. How he go, I disagree with that.
Oh, why don't you do that with Patino opening night? See how it goes.
Are you still coaching softball?
No.
You ever get tossed from a game?
No, I've never been tossed from a game.
Oh, because you were like a famous softball coach for a long time.
I wasn't a famous.
Well, yeah, I mean, they used to talk about it on Mike and Chris. You were coach. Didn't you coach?
I had trouble with parents.
Didn't you coach your daughter too? Like you did a lot of coaching.
No, because I wanted to help, and I wanted to coach these travel teams, but I did not want to coach my daughter.
Interesting. Okay, so I can see that to an extent.
And so when she moved up,
yep,
that's what was my opportunity to coach the team. So I didn't, because my philosophy was this, coaching your daughter is not hard.
Mm-hmm.
Coaching your friends are.
Well, sometimes it's hard coaching my son. So it depends on the game. Yeah, I mean, that's the exact opposite of daddy ball. Wow, interesting. And Sal, I do remember hearing that a lot. Yeah. Like, and did you also coach, because the Fan had a basketball team back in the day. Did you also coach that?
Basketball team.
You did. I remember hearing that all the time.
Oh, no, there was sometimes, we had a good roster. Sometimes we had Mike Breen.
Oh, Mike
played, Jennings, Billy Taylor.
Mike played at Stepanak, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, Mike Breen. Good ball player. CHSAA.
It was good. We drew big crowds.
I'm sure.
We filled Christ the King one night.
Wow.
And I was coaching against Louis.
We got. Wow. We have, unfortunately, Brian Baldinger coming up, so we got to let you go here. Last thing, though, because you probably, you could reference this because you know, you were around. Babe Ruth better than Ohtani? You saw him play, right?
Oh, yeah.
Mate, don't take the bait with this guy. This guy will make you walk into everything.
But you know what, though? Ohtani is some talent.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Mink. Of course. We appreciate the insight. Mink, seriously,
he went 9 for 9 last night.
Mink, see, that's why I did updates for 33 years.
Yes, we know.
We love you, despite messing around. And I love doing St. John's with you still. I can't wait till Monday. Awesome having you back.
All kidding aside, always. We do love you. Miss you in the newsroom in Astoria and here every day. Good luck in your retirement. We'll talk to you soon, Mink. We'll see you next year.
Just don't wait for the email.
The door.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
What's up, guys? It's Candace Dillard-Bassett, former Real Housewife of Potomac.
And I'm Michael Arsenault, author of the New York Times bestseller, I Can't Date Jesus. And this is Undomesticated, the podcast where we aren't just saying the quiet parts out loud.
We're putting it all on the kitchen table and inviting you to the function. If you're ready for some bold takes and a little bit of chaos, welcome to Undomesticated. Follow and listen to Undomesticated available wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Insider Calls, brought to you by Nationwide. For your insurance and financial needs, Nationwide is on your side. Boldy, let's start with the Carl Banks comments. I'm sure by now you've heard about it, but he was very critical of Dexter Lawrence. You were the first to be critical of Dexter Lawrence way back in either week one or week two. What have you seen? First of all, what did you think of Carl's comments, and what have you seen from Lawrence on film as you break it down?
I thought Carl was fair. I mean, he's just, you know, he's at every game. He's watching this stuff. You know, Dexter Lawrence went up against the center, making his first NFL start at center. And Brett Toth, he's the backup center in Philadelphia. And you didn't hear Dexter's name mentioned. He got a half a sack there at one point. First time he's gotten a quarterback to the ground all year. But I just thought, like, okay, this kid, Brett Toth, who's never started a game at center, he's going to have his hands full with Dexter Lawrence. And the Eagles had their best day offensively all year, and their best day running the football all year by far. And it wasn't even close. And so I didn't think he had much of an impact in the game. And you would think, like, a guy out there that's, you know, just trying to snap the ball and, you know, get assignments down, all that kind of stuff, and an underused player, like, he would have his way with them, and he didn't.
All right, we all know he's not playing well, and I agree. I thought Carl was on point and fair. But you need to tell us why. Is it a lack of explosion? Is he out of shape? Is it technique? Why is he not doing much?
Yeah, I don't see his, you know, I mean, he's always, obviously, he's got size. You don't see, you know, and there's guys that are that big in this league. I mean, Vita Vea in Tampa, there's a handful of them that are that size. And you see their enormous strength. Derrick Brown, sometimes Jalen Carter in Philly. You just see enormous strength that most people don't have. You don't see his strength. So some of that is a function of, is it conditioning? Because he doesn't look like he has. That was always the impressive thing about Dexter, at least in the last 2 years, since Wink Martindale really challenged him a few years back. And you saw him play a lot of snaps, you know, 70, 75% of the snaps. And then you saw enormous strength where you go, this is a long, hard day. I mean, Jason Kelce has talked about it all the time. That was his toughest assignment. Is dealing with his size and strength, and you just don't see that on display right now.
You think that's a coaching thing, Boldy?
No. But players at this point, I mean, year seven, whatever it is now, you know how to play. You know how to play the game. You know, coaching isn't going to say, okay, Shane Bone isn't saying, don't toss this guy across the field here. Like, you know, players have to play, and I don't believe that has anything to do with scheme or coaching or anything else.
Okay. Hey, Boldy, we're both of the opinion here that the Giants should go get a receiver for Jackson Dart, not even for a playoff push, just to, you know, help accelerate his development and, you know, go through reads and, you know, win some one-on-one matchups, blah, blah, blah. You agree with that?
Yes, I do. Because, Jalin Hyatt didn't play the other day. I know that Slayton got the touchdown pass. I don't understand the call. Like, he did, you know, break loose. That was a terrible call on him, I thought. But
terrible.
I do think, like, this guy is, I think this kid is going to be special. But you've got to give him some help. Wandale has had moments this year, but he's a slot guy. Every once in a while, they'll put him outside. But they I believe that if you want to get the best out of Jackson getting ready for next year, go get him some help. And there's going to be some receivers out there, but I think they should be aggressive about it. I don't care how many games they've won. Like, this is all about his development right now. And so you lose Scatterboo, which is obviously just crushing. But I think that they need help at that position right now. And I'm a subscriber to what you're saying here. Like, go get him some help. Give him a chance.
BT and Sal and the fam, we're talking with Brian Baldinger. Insider Calls are brought to you by Nationwide for your insurance and financial needs. Nationwide is on your side. What about the other horrific call in that game, Baldy? What'd you think of the tush push? Could have been fumble that was not overturned or was not able to be reviewed.
You know, so I didn't really understand the whole trend. Like, I saw the play, and honestly, I mean, Jalen is reaching the ball out for the first down when Kayvon takes it out of his hands and has possession of it. Now, I don't know when I tried to figure out when the umpire was blowing his whistle. It was hard to say, but the whistle wasn't blown when Kayvon grabbed the ball. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, Brian, you know, Coach Dable's over there going, wait a second, I can't challenge this. Like, At first they said you can't challenge the call, whatever. Then he challenged it. So I'm like, okay, is there something else in the rule book there that should allow him to challenge it? Because honestly, I thought, you know, I don't know. I heard Kayvon talking about it in the locker room afterwards, and Burns, he's like, don't say anything. You're going to get fined. So, but I it's a different look. I'll just say this. It's a difficult play to officiate, because when does the forward momentum really stop? He's being pushed from behind. Like, Kayvon doesn't think the play is over by any stretch. And if the quarterback puts the ball out there in harm's way, and we see this all the time, whether quarterback sneak going over the top, guys punching the ball out, we see it all the time in this league. Like, I feel like that's a legitimate play by Kayvon that I thought it's difficult to officiate. I get it. But I don't know. I was kind of on Kayvon's side on that one.
No, there's no doubt. The refs were horrendous. That's not the only calls they messed up. They were bad. All right, so listen, nice to see Aaron Glenn get a win. It's good. We haven't really talked about Muji very often because, you know, the season's here, and why would you? But as the season develops, despite just the one win, Mason Taylor looks like a player. Membu looks like they got that right. Found the punter in McNamara. And the guy who I was roasting the first couple of games, Brandon Stevens, who he brought in as a free agent corner, like the last 4 or 5 weeks, he's graded out tremendously, not to mention the trade for Brownlee here. I think Muji quietly has put together some interesting pieces.
And Thomas at corner, who started for Sauce, played. Yep. I mean, look, Jamar Chase didn't end up in the end zone. Like, I know he gave him some throws, but like nothing got over his head. I thought he played well. Marinoa, the linebacker 51, I thought he played well. You can see contributions from the rookie class to help them win that game. And, you know, when you win a game like that, you're like, okay, you know, Kansas City was close, Tampa was close. Like, you start giving them a little bit more leeway, you know, after they win a game. Mm-hmm. But I would say all those young kids all showed up. And so even the rookie Aaron Smith, like, he made a 22-yard comeback. You don't see anybody run this league.
Yeah, he can run. He can run.
Yeah, he can run. But the comeback throw on the timing from Justin, that was an impressive. Like, that kind of opened your eyes a little bit, like, because he ran that corner all the way down the field off, and then came back to the ball nicely.
Yeah, that looked pretty good. Okay, so back to Mason Taylor for a sec. So it's funny, Jet fans, and I'm one of them, always fixate on the absence of a quarterback, obviously, but the Jets rarely have a tight end that can win matchups. And I think we all thought that Taylor could get open a little bit, but, and this is where I want you to tell us, like, I see him sticking his beak in there and delivering some really good blocks.
No, he's come a long ways. Like, they went to a lot of what we call YY formation, two tight ends, him and Rucker, and they did a good job on Breece Hall's 35-yard run, and even the touchdown run, they did a good job of sealing right there and working in tandem together. I think Mason Taylor's going to be a really good player. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the bloodlines are the bloodlines. That doesn't guarantee anything. But he does have real – like, I thought Breece could have hit him right away on the winning touchdown. Like, just he's just very smooth in and out of breaks. I think the way that he moves, the way that he runs, and now the improved blocking, like, I honestly think they've got themselves a really good player there. And I think – second half of the season, I think we're going to see it.
What do you think was the worst loss, Baldy? The Giants blowing the game in Denver or the Bengals losing that game at home to the Jets?
I think Denver's loss, Giants loss, because everything had to go right for that one to happen. And, you know, look, the Bengals had 15-point lead as well. So I don't know which one is worse.
And but the winless, felt like the Giants. The winless Jets. I mean, I'm with you. That's why I asked you the question. I just can't believe those comebacks, Baldy.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is the league right now. I mean, the Jets made two stops at the end of the game, one to get the ball back to go down and score, and one once they did score to stop, you know, that those two receivers from beating them, and they did. And so that was pretty impressive at the end by the Jets defense that, you know, hadn't really been able to stop a really good offense like that.
We know it's still pretty early, and we know that you're wrapped up in the NFL stuff. And I asked you this maybe 5 or 6 weeks ago, and it was really early. Any updated opinion now? And I know we know it could change who the best quarterback is in college. I like Mendoza. How about you?
I like Mendoza also. I mean, Indiana's rolling. So, you know, he looks special. I don't know. I honestly, I'm doing Texas Tech and BYU next weekend, out there in Lubbock. I think Mahomes are actually going to be there on the sideline for that one. But I'm just, I haven't really studied him enough to know. Like,
All right.
I mean, still really early.
What are your expectations, Baldy, as far as the wins losses go the rest of the way for both the Giants and the Jets? Start with the Giants at 2-6. I still think the expectation should be raised to where they could be winning some of these games. So I think Dable needs to show that. What are your expectations for the Giants win loss wise the rest of the way?
Well, they've got a pretty undermanned San Francisco 49er team coming to town. I mean, they lost their two best defensive players, Fred Warner and Nick Bosa. They were unimpressive on Sunday, to say the least. Robert Saleh is coming back to that stadium. Week before, he had his defense playing lights out. Bryce Huff, who didn't play last week, was awesome. We'll see if he can go. But I think they got a chance to win that game. They don't scare you offensively at all. McCaffrey got completely shut down by Houston. So, that's that. And I think, when the Jets come back from this this bye week, they play Cleveland at home. I mean, Cleveland is they're very similar. They got all rookies playing everywhere. Rookie tight end, rookie quarterback, rookie running backs, rookies all over the defense. I mean, go win that game. And it's a Darren Mooji game. Go show us your young guys have a chance to develop and be a part of the future.
By the way, Giants minus San Francisco minus 2.5, obviously coming across the country. Real quick, final thing for me, the way Aaron Glenn has handled the media this year, you're from here, but you've been all around the country, stabilized with a win. Do you like the feistiness? Is it too much? How do you process what Aaron's been doing so far? More the verbal jousting back and forth.
Yeah, I think by trying to be friends or funny, glib, I don't know that wins anybody over. 0-7 is 0-7. You get the win, you get the win. I mean, I just think stonewalling and not really saying anything is not a bad approach at this point, because everybody's going to have their own opinions about who the Jets are when the record says what they are, and maybe he made a mistake with the quarterback, all these kind of things. Like, he has to kind of – yes, Sunday showed us some things that, yes, maybe they are getting some work done. We don't see the penalties that we saw last year, that we saw in the first 5 weeks. We saw a real cut down in that. And so let's just see it kind of grow a little bit here with them. I don't have any problem with this approach at this point. I know it's not New York media friendly at this point, but I don't think by going the other direction, he does him any favors.
Last one from me, Baldy. The record is what it is, but maybe even more of an indictment is what Daniel Jones has done in the first year away from Brian Daboll and the Giants. What do you think is the reason that Daniel Jones has been able to have so much success right away with Steichen in Indianapolis when he couldn't get it going here?
I hate to say stability, because that has not been a great stable franchise. They've been terrible. They haven't found a quarterback, and they've gone through them all. Carson Wentz, Philip Rivers. I mean, he went through a bunch of Matt Ryan. They went through quarterbacks like crazy trying to find it. But Shane Steichen went to a Super Bowl with the Eagles, won a Super Bowl with the Eagles. He didn't win one, but he went to the Super Bowl with the Eagles. He's a great play caller. Their talent around Daniel Jones is elite, but his playing, he's as good as anybody in this league right now. I mean, Drake May is playing really good, and Jordan Love is playing good. But, I mean, honestly, he's as good as anybody right now. And it's every throw. Like, I just think the offense and the talent around him is elite, and he just can just do his job right now. All right, here's the open receiver. Let's throw it to him. But it's crazy to see how good he is right now.
So that's not a coaching thing, in your opinion?
Oh, I think it's a big deal. It's a big part of it is coaching. I think with Shane Steichen and the offense line coach is really, really good. The line is really stable. They got the leading rusher in the league. Like, I think a lot of – but the way that they designed the offense – it looks like it's number one offense football, but it looks almost unstoppable at this point. And Daniel Jones is making it go.
Well, Boldy, the bottom line is this: when you've got, three, four, five holes on the offense every year, like he did with the Giants, not to mention some bad coaching, you're asking Daniel Jones to be something that he's not capable of being. And that's an elevator of substandard talent. You plug in real players around him, and a real coach, he's certainly good enough to win. That's for sure.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, the year that they went to the playoffs, he ran for 800 yards that year, including the win against Minnesota. He ran for 800 yards, and it was a big part of the offense, was him and Saquon running. Like, they're not asking him to do that. They've got Jonathan Taylor. Like, they've got an all-pro, all-world left guard. They rebuilt the interior of their offense line. Their tight end looks like Mark Bavaro. Like, I mean, it's just, you know, they've got a slot receiver. They've got two outside receivers. And honestly, I haven't seen anybody defend that offense yet properly.
Thank you, Baldy. Like,
it's a function of the talent and the coaching.
Thank you, Baldy. We appreciate your time as always.
Good job, yeah, man.
My pleasure, guys.
All right, it was Odyssey NFL Insider Brian Baldinger, host of the Best Football Show podcast. Insider calls are brought to you by Nationwide. For your insurance and financial needs, Nationwide is on your side.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
What's up, guys? It's Candace Dillard-Bassett.
And I'm Michael Arsenault, and this is Undomesticated.
We're putting it all on the kitchen table and inviting you to the function. Follow and listen to Undomesticated, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, a board-certified OBGYN and menopause specialist. My new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it really takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Every week, I sit down with medical experts, cultural icons, and powerhouse women to talk about what really matters: your health, your power, and your future. We're covering hormones, identity, finances, relationships, and so much more. New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Unpaused with me, Dr. Mary Claire Haver, available now wherever you get your podcasts.